CliffCentral.com.
All right, it is Monday morning, CliffCentral.com. We've got lots of good stuff still coming your way in this hour. The Qatar World Cup is getting better, says Seven Kenege. Well, yeah. Oh, hang on. My microphone is muted. Sorry. Dumb move. Sorry.
I said
good Monday morning. I was just referring to a comment here made by Seven Kenege about the World Cup getting better. I hope so. I'm getting into it a little bit. We want to hear from you this morning. Lots of fun things to talk about, and I hope you had a good weekend. And if you're just getting out of your weekend mood and mode right now, well, I always find Mondays the best because I pile my plate on a Monday with stuff to do. So I have just tons and tons of things that I have to get done on a Monday.
It just forces you to get going. Yeah. You need something to help you.
You can't, like, if Mondays are slow, and that's why I know hairdressers, for example, usually take the Monday off, right? And there's some businesses where they, you know, the real work starts on a Tuesday. But for me, like, I love hitting the road running. And then, you know, by halfway through Monday, you're like, I'm getting things done. Woohoo! My day is full. My week has started right. So listen to what, you know, I was talking about going with the nephews to this place where you paint these ceramics. And then what happens is you do all the painting yourself, and then they put them into a kiln, and they obviously bake them, and then they dip them in glaze. And then you get this really cool, like, plate or whatever it is. You could paint a little jug or you know, some other kind of whatever it is, something made out of this bisque porcelain. Anyway, lots of fun, a cool thing to do, and just a nice way to spend an afternoon. It takes, like, you know, an hour or two, and seeing these two kids and how different their approach to art is just really, really interesting. It reveals a lot about people's personality, too. Either way, Cassandra says she's been doing something fun. She says, I started a life drawing class this year. I paint naked people. I paint naked people on a Monday night. It's 150 a class. I take wine, and I've met the most amazing people. It's my weekly reset. Great music, art vibes. I mean, wine, naked people, great music, interesting people. For 150 Rand, do it. Wow.
So you don't actually paint on the naked people. You paint pictures of them.
Yeah.
But still, I mean, I've thought about it before. Actually, one of my clients that I've recently taken on, they're an accommodation place in Yorkshire.
Oh, yeah.
And they do a lot of bachelorette parties, and one of the activities is that you can do life painting.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought about the initial awkwardness, but I mean, the people who organize these things are really good at making you not feel awkward.
No, but also
they set the vibe and they set the tone.
No, but the models in these situations are the kind of people who are comfortable being nude.
Yeah.
And if you want to, I mean, I've never drawn or painted a nude before, but I think it must be quite fun. And also, you know, if you don't have a lot of, let's say, artistic or visual stimulation in your life, it's probably not a bad idea. I mean, you're programmed to react in an optimistic, fun, kind of happy way to nudity, because otherwise we wouldn't procreate. So it's probably a good idea to get some endorphins going there anyway, just for the artist, let alone the model.
Yeah.
But it's not a sexual thing, you know?
No, it's not. I mean, for someone like me, who I wouldn't be able to even draw a cell phone, to be honest. To draw a human form would be really challenging.
Well, you see, this is the point. I mean, I watched my dad doing this. He's not artistic. My mother is very. But he had a lot of fun just taking little dropper bottles and kind of making these dots all over things. And, you know, you can. You don't have to be the most talented. It's not a competition. And when you do these things, and really there are so many interesting places opening up now, places where, you know, the kids are decorating the tablecloth, or, you know, people are busy making something while they're sitting there talking to each other. There really are fun things to do that don't have to cost you an arm and a leg. And there can be a whole lot of creative output for you. You feel afterwards like you not only have had a meal, which you can also do at the same time, but you've created something. Like Hanan said, you've made something out of nothing.
Yeah, and lots of laughing, I'm sure. I do like Carl DeSantos's comment there. If you don't have an artistic bone in your body, perhaps this is the way to get one.
Oh, my God. Now, Cassandra says there's no touching the naked people, Lias. None of us, she says, are artists, so we're all there for different reasons. That's interesting. I didn't sleep well over the weekend, says Ruth. I felt exhausted on a Monday. We need that three-day weekend. And she's talking about the Clay Cafe, which is where we went. But, I do think that sometimes I want a weekend after a weekend, but that's where December comes in handy. What I'm also going to do this December is I'm not going to have like these really rigid, strict weekdays, because we've got the show to do in the mornings. But if I feel like going for a dinner with people on a Wednesday night, I'm going to do it this December. I'm going to make it, you know, easier to say yes to stuff, not be so goddamn restrictive and full of rules. And because I like rules, and I sometimes make too many. Learn to break away from those some of the time. Robin says, I recently was invited to a nudist party, dinner party, but I had to skip it. I had nothing to wear. Bum, ba-da-dum, bum. Ugh. Hush.
Well, the thing is, you've got to pitch up in something, don't you?
Yeah. Apparently, nude models here in the UK have a union called RAM, R-A-M, Registered Art Models. A guy was banned for getting boners and winking at the artists. So weird.
Oh, no, that's so gross.
Yeah, look, you don't have to draw nudes. It could be something else. You know, I've always found it really, really boring as someone who has painted in my life to paint still lives. Oh, God, I hate a still life. Ugh.
Really?
Like a vase of flowers or a bowl of fruit or whatever. It's the most boring thing ever. I can't stand it. Have you
done a portrait of Alice yet?
No. But I like painting people, and I love drawing things like floor plans and, you know, architectural renderings and elevations and that sort of thing. That's fun for me. I like doing that. I like, people would hate that.
I like sort of more geographical doodling, and there are quite a few videos from artists who help you do that in a good way, creating lines and colouring in certain parts.
Geographical doodling?
Yeah, so, you know, not drawing something freehand like a penguin or something like that, but just doodling, maybe with curves that cross each other, and every part that crosses you, you add a little darkened diamond, and then you can colour in all the parts in different colours. Maybe even with water paints, dropping water on them so the colors bleed. That type of thing I enjoy.
All right. As long as you're getting something out of it, that's all that matters. but there are lots of things that you can do. And it doesn't take a lot to be creative. We were talking about gardening earlier. That's a creative pursuit. If you're planting things in bags on your balcony of your apartment, you're doing something creative. Yeah. You could fix some piece of furniture in your house. You could paint the walls of a room to a different color.
Redecorate your bookcase.
It doesn't have to cost you a fortune. It really doesn't. You know, someone sent me a video, and you know how I love these organizing, tidying videos. You know, these people who everything is so organized in their house that I'm jealous when I see it. Like, you have a container for these things, and they're all neatly arrayed, and you have a container. Trust me, I've tried all of that stuff, and in some places I get it right, in other places not so much. But this one video, they had this woman who just basically went through her bookshelf, this huge bookshelf in a long room, and she arranged all the books by color. So she had a shelf with red books, a shelf with green ones, pink ones, black ones, white ones, purple ones. And it looked really cool at the end of it. And I thought, wow, that could be a fun thing to do. It doesn't have to cost you anything. You basically take an afternoon off and create some order in the chaos of life. There's something to that. There's something to establishing a bit of order in your own house. And then it makes it so much more pleasant to be in that house for December. Because your chances are that you're going to spend a lot more time at home in the house over the next few weeks. May as well make it nice. You know, may as well fix something that's not working. And don't look at it as a, like, oh, no, maintenance, DIY, bleh, this is so boring. Rather look at it as, a chance for me to establish some really cool order in this place and make it a little bit nicer. Nothing wrong with that.
And I think that's probably where things like Instagram come in really handy for people like that. You know, I remember as a kid, I used to love organizing, even if it was just the grocery cupboard or the bathroom cupboard or something like that. And the kind of dopamine fix that you got from that was people in your family saying, oh my God, that looks amazing. Well, thank you for doing this.
Damn right.
And when you live alone, you may not have that, but that's where, that kind of calibration that Dr. Hanan was talking about, you receive through posting that image on Instagram, you know, or sharing it on social media.
Listen, I've subscribed to so many of these channels where these professional organizing people, they it's so inspiring. I just love it. I saw the most brilliant video the other day. I thought of you, Leanne, and I thought I'd better bring this up on the show, hence the discussion now. But there's this video about this this guy who sells like antique furniture or whatever, and he opened up this a Georgian writing desk, but it's got all these secret compartments in it. So basically he takes it was so much fun. It only lasted like, I don't know, 50 seconds or whatever of this video. The most fun thing ever. You see him like pull out this special secret cabinet, and then behind that there's another area for storage, and it's just like this really cool old, it must be what, 200-300 years old, this desk, but it's got little things that you turn and then this pops out, and so much fun to watch. I just loved it. That's the kind of thing
loved
I do.
Those. Mm. But that leads me on to one of the stories I wanted to speak about today. And that was this couple in the US. They've been documenting all of this on TikTok. But they bought a home, a 130-year-old home. So not quite as old as your Georgian piece of furniture. But still, they received this letter out of the blue from someone in Canada, a bit of a mysterious letter. The couple are Courtney and Matt. And this letter said, I was the last surviving member of the family that previously owned this estate.
Okay.
And let me introduce myself, etc. This person says, I grew up in it. And I'd like to tell you something that the estate agents will not have known. And would not have passed this information on to you. I'd like to tell you about the secret rooms and a few things that you may not have been told when you bought the house.
Okay, carry on. This is good.
So documenting that, you can actually watch videos of them reading parts of this letter to see if, you know, what they read comes true. So they took a tour around this. It's a rambling Victorian-style home. And they recently purchased it from the historical society in their area. So it hadn't been occupied for quite a long time. So one of the first things that they discovered was this little hidden escape room, which led on from their bathroom. And Courtney, the female of the couple, says it's by far the scariest room that we discovered in the house.
Shit.
Because it was kind of really antiquated and shabby. But she says the thing is, it turned out to be like more of a crawl space than a big room. So they went into the bathroom and they found this tiny little locked door directly opposite the loo. And then upon opening that, this opened up into a huge sprawling trunk room. And it's a space that they'll definitely use, but kind of at the moment they don't know what they're going to do with it. So they run these polls and ask people what they think they should do with it.
That sounds so cool.
It is.
Discovering like hidden rooms in your house. Amazing.
For me, the one exciting thing was this secret liquor cabinet that they found. It was
of course that was what you were excited about,
Well, what I liked about this is that there were actual trinkets in there. It was above the fireplace in their front parlor, and tucked behind the sliding mirrored panel were all of these vintage spirits, these decades old unopened bottles of French rosé wine from 1970, Cab Sav from 1989, there were these aged containers of bourbon, beer, cream sherry.
Oh, wow.
So that that was quite amazing. And then very interestingly, they had like a hideaway in another room, which looked like a bit of a creepy attic. And then little trinkets all around the house and pieces of furniture that were in these hidden places, including like an old music box.
Hmm.
And this music box only plays one song. And she calls it a hair-raising rendition of the wedding march when you crank it.
Oh, wow. Wouldn't it be cool, though, to discover little hidden spaces in your house? I mean, that's where I think, you know, most of our houses in South Africa aren't that old. So
no.
You're not going to find any of this stuff. But if a house has had more than three or four generations in it, it's bound to have little secrets in it. And how cool would it be to discover those things?
So fun.
No, I love it. What an awesome. Where did they find this letter, by the way? The letter that told them where all the stuff was hidden?
It was posted to the house from Canada.
Oh, so someone sent it to them.
Yes.
Oh, nice.
But the letter itself was really secretive. It didn't mention much more than where these secret rooms were.
I love it. All right. Well, I mean, that sounds very like cool. The kind of thing that you could spend your holiday doing, right? Exploring your own house.
Oh, yeah.
Very, very cool.
And again, then you get the gratification and the calibration from your audience by sharing it on social media.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, listen.
I mean, the one video is 1.2 million views.
Social media can be handy, but you have to actually still be doing the real life stuff to make it worthwhile. And then you share it with a whole bunch of other people. But the idea of sharing, you know, the fun times where people are on holiday, for example, and you're with your friends and you're really enjoying yourself, and you suddenly feel the compulsion to share that with strangers. That's odd. But if you're creating a channel and you want to, you know, do interesting things and then share it with the world, I don't see any problem with that at all. Otherwise, people like us would never have known about stories like this. So It's a good thing. Let us turn our attention quickly to Angela, because I've known Angela for years. Angela Young is a jewelry designer, a philanthropist, and the founder of the Impilo Collection Foundation. And she just got back from Nepal, where she summited 6,200-meter island peak Mount Everest. She was with a group including Sarai Kumalo, who's the first black woman to have summited Mount Everest back in 2019. That was in May of that year. She's also been doing really interesting things at Paris Fashion Week, which we'll ask her about in a moment. But here she is. Angela, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Nice to see you. Haven't seen you in a while. You good?
Yes, exactly. I'm good.
Yeah,
you?
The last time I always see Angela at these kind of high society events where she always looks magnificent, and I didn't know you were climbing mountains. When did this start?
I remember we actually had a conversation. We came to Cliff Central in 2018. Do you remember? That was my first time climbing Kili.
I remember that you'd been doing this stuff, but it wasn't something that when I, you know, every time I'd seen you out, for example, in Joburg, I didn't immediately remember the mountain. It's something you obviously enjoy doing, though, and it's definitely something great for kind of raising money and raising awareness and all the rest of it, right? I mean, when did you start first with your climbing stuff?
I think, you know, everybody has different reasons to climb. For me, I felt the mountain actually call me, and I mentioned it before that 2017 was the first time I actually met my biological mother.
Oh, yeah?
In Japan. Yeah, and yeah, because my mom is Japanese and my dad is Chinese. If you know the history between the two countries, the Chinese hate the Japanese because
Absolutely. In
Second World War, a lot of Chinese were killed by the Japanese.
Yeah, there was that big issue around Manchuria, and the Japanese came in, and there are still museums in northern China that are, you know, full of kind of the stories of all the terrible things that the Japanese did there. But so your mother's Japanese, your father Chinese, and you only met her back in 2017. That's an amazing story.
Yeah, so I think because of my jewelry brought me back to Japan, and I said to myself, you know, I've been looking for her for 30 years, and I felt, you know, this is the time I really have to go and see her. And I spoke to my Buddhist friends in Japan. I said to her, you know, I'm really giving up now. You know, for 30 years I've been looking for her. She says, no, I will help you to find her like a pin in the ocean. And she really just tracked her down. And then I realized that she's antique dealers. So it's mm-hmm. actually in our genes that we're all very artistic.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was really difficult, you know, for the last 30 years. And you don't really see that of me. We're all trying to portray ourselves, you know, to help people see you. And, you know, she left me and my dad when I was only 3 years old. And it was very difficult for my dad because people would think, oh, you know, especially in an Asian society, they think, what a loser that you can't even keep your wife around, you know. And those days, it is very difficult for a Japanese to live in a Chinese community. So for her, I think it was so she just couldn't handle it. And one day she just decided to leave without even saying goodbye. So I remember my dad was holding me and ran all the way to the airport and we couldn't find her. You know, it was too late. And those days, you know, 40, 50 years ago, you can't, like, if that person's gone, it's gone. And you have to write letters to that person. And it would take a long time to track that person down. And you don't have facts, you know. It's not like internet that we have here, like, in these days. Mm. So it was really difficult for my dad. So he didn't know how to look after me. My hair's always in a mess. He put shorts over long sleeve for me. And he put a skirt on me. He's worried that I'd catch a cold. He would put a long pants on me. And, you know, it's just like, and his family even said to him, you know what, why are you dragging this little monkey around? So why don't you just leave her at the orphanage?
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, and even that we have an aunt, she had mental illness, and they would say to my dad, why don't you just leave Angela with her so you don't have to drag her around? And, like, holiday was really a nightmare for me because I have to actually sleep under his office desk. He have to hide me around. So, you know, it was very, very difficult for me.
Angela, this is amazing. What an amazing, amazing story. I didn't know this about you, and I've known you for a long time. What you're telling us here is absolutely extraordinary. Just knowing that, you know, there are lots of people who've been raised by single moms. Very few people I know raised by single dads. And this 30 or more year gap between – how long has it been since you said you were 3 when your mom left and you finally managed to reconnect with her, what, last year or 2017?
2017 is 5 years ago.
Sure.
Yeah.
Wow. I just want to fast forward quickly to your mom. And you tracked her down eventually, which is a remarkable achievement because a lot of these – you know, a lot of parents who do leave – they don't want to be found. What happened when you two found each other and how did that go? Explain that story to us.
You know, like you say, you know, they don't want to be found because it's a lot of guilt. Mm. It was very difficult. Even if I tried to track her down and she would try to avoid me as much as she can. Mm. So it was really difficult. And when my friends actually finally spoke to her, and my Japanese are so little because it's like I was still in my little girl speaking broken Japanese. Mm. And for me to even speaking to her was very difficult. And I can't even express myself. Mm. And she actually told me, we're going to drive from Tokyo to Kanagawa for 1.5 hours. And she said to me, Angela, we're not going to tell her that we are coming. You sit in the car. We're going to knock on her door. And when it's ready, I'll tell you to come out. And she, that moment was driving all the way to Kanagawa. My heart was pumping out of my chest. You don't know what to expect if she's going to run away or, you know, what's going to happen. Mm. But I think Japanese are very reserved. Mm. And when she knocked on the door and by the antique shop that she's inside the shop, when I saw her, the back of her by the window, oh my God, you know.
Sure.
It was, you know, it was just very that moment so. That you're trying to waited for 30 years, you know, this is the moment. And when my friend said to me, yeah, Angela, you can come. So my heart is still pumping the whole time. And just walking in, she was very polite and said to me, please sit down. Like, and she knew that I'm, she kind of had that feeling that I'm going to come. She said to me, and the day that I met her, on 21st of January, it was her birthday.
Oh, wow.
And I didn't even know this woman for a bowl of soap. And, you know, like, it's just like the universe answered my prayer. And the moment you met her, it was a special day for her. She says, oh, you know, by the way, it's my birthday. Maybe please stay for sushi, you know. And it's just, yeah, it was the day that in my life that I've been waiting for 30 years.
That's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. Angela, what a beautiful, beautiful story. Have you continued to maintain contact with her?
Yes, I try. Still a lot of guilt, you know. I brought my daughter with me the year after to go and see her so she can realize that she's actually a grandmother as well. But it was very difficult. It's also the same time that my dad had cancer, prostate cancer. And we found out she also have cancer at the same time. You know how it's ironic that they didn't even see each other for so many years, and they actually got sick at the same time, and I able to connect the two of them.
Wow.
That was, you know, just a lot of things that, you know, you happen in life, and we're all trying to cover it up and, you know, to make the best of you.
Well, you see, and this is all stuff that you don't know until you start talking to somebody.
Yes,
I really thought this morning you and I would be talking about climbing mountains and raising money for charity and all of this stuff, which you do as well. But this is my highlight of the morning, to hear these stories. This is real human stuff. This is the stuff all of us can feel something for. Your dad, you said, got prostate cancer. Did you manage to connect the two of them? Did they ever see each other again?
No, they don't. No, but I actually told them, you know, this is what happened to Dad. He's actually having cancer at the same time as you. And, yeah, so I managed to go and see her in the hospital in Japan. And that crucial time, I was there for her. But it's still very difficult because every time when I'm there, I kind of remind her what she did to us. And like, she's also tried to distance herself in a polite way, but I can understand that. But for me, and my daughter even says to me, Mom, why are you going to see her? She didn't even want you. But, you know, she doesn't understand because she have me the whole time, you know, the whole time I'm there for her. So it's easy for her to say that, but I said to her, you know, it is not for her. It's also for myself that I needed that.
Oh, wow.
I needed to. Yeah.
It's a very, very emotional thing. Angela, you also, you know, must be strange for both your parents because you live in Africa. I mean, it's such a funny place for you to be when you've got one Japanese and one Chinese parent, you know, and you're doing all these amazing things here. Do they know about your work? Did they find out about your work here in Africa?
I think that's why I'm very active on social media. So sometimes if they can see it in the Facebook, you know, they're still in the Blue Village. So it's, like, you know, going back to why did we here in South Africa, because it's also a political reason in Hong Kong. So I born in Hong Kong. And those days, we are still very worried about Hong Kong going back to China.
Yeah.
And yeah, so that is the reason before 1997, we all trying to find a place to immigrate. And my stepmom have, family here in South Africa, and this is just, no, come to South Africa, you know, this is a beautiful place. We have never been here before. We just pack up everything, sold everything in Hong Kong and just come here in South Africa. And yeah, so it's been like 30 something years ago, we try to adapt ourselves here in South Africa because of political reasons. And yeah, but never look back.
Were you made to feel welcome here straight away, and are South Africans generally welcoming to you?
It wasn't, because I started in Bloemfontein. I was in Free State.
Oh, wow.
That's a tough one.
Yes, exactly. It was 1990, and those days was still apartheid. And it was very difficult. I don't know where I'm really fitting. You know, those days, most Chinese are coming from Taiwan. I can't speak a word of Mandarin. And for me, I really have to even try to fit into my community first. And I'm not black, I'm not white.
Yeah.
You know, the whole time you're really trying to fit into this whole society and to be accepted. It was really difficult.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I think part of your story that's resonated with me is where you said that your daughter was questioning, "Mom, why are you going to see your mother when she left you alone for so long?" And that's, in my eyes, and I obviously don't know your full situation, but to me, that's a daughter protecting her mom. She's protecting you from being hurt. Which I think is really special. But hopefully she's been able to now understand your reason for wanting to close the gap. And then I think what must be really difficult for you, as you mentioned, culturally, there's something very different about the Japanese and their reservation and keeping their emotions inside. You know, in any sort of Western movie or series that we were watching where families are reunited, one of the first questions that the abandoned child would ask is, "Mom, why did you leave?" And it must, you know, you say that she's very reserved about that, and it must have been something that you wanted to ask and you were itching to ask all along. And were you able to ask it eventually?
Yes, I do. I did actually ask her. And you know, of course, you know, it's easy for a person to blame the other person. And, you know, so it was kind of a little bit disappointed, because she was actually saying, to, you know, "Oh, it was my dad's fault." And then, you know, but then when I told my dad about my mom, that I actually met her, the first reaction he would say to me, "So how is she doing? Is she okay? Is she healthy?" You know, that I felt like subconsciously I actually choose to be with my dad, because, you know, for me, we kind of move on and just to really doing our best every day and just to move, you know, to a different direction and not to hold back. And it's very difficult to see people are still holding back and holding grudges. So I felt, my dad is the one who actually raised me. So it's very difficult. It was torn between that feeling of, you know, someone's blaming the other person. But I also can understand where my mom coming from, because being a mother now. Oh. And like you say, my daughter also will get to understand more how what we as a woman going through. The older she get.
Well, I'm sure that there must have been moments, but your mother sounds like she sounds like the most tremendously stoic, kind of reserved, courteous, you know, almost like, you know, makes sure that she presents herself in such a way that she doesn't give anything away. But I'm sure that in her quiet moments, she must have thought about you a lot, and she must have thought about your father a lot, and she must have been very, very sad for a very long time. It must have been scary for her to see you.
Yeah, it is. It is. I think for her, psychologically, must be going through a lot as well. Even she told me that in one point she actually wanted to suicide. And, you know, so to me, it was a lot to absorb at that time. And yeah, that's why I think going back to the reason why I'm climbing is because that's why I said the mountain actually come and call me. I didn't go and look for the mountain.
Yes.
And when Richard asked me to go and climb for Caring for Girls, and I say, you know what, this really makes sense. You can't actually give if you don't have. So when you only give when you truly have. So I felt, so 2017 I met her, 2018 I felt, this is the time I should be doing something for someone else. It's not just about me. And having this, all this difficult time, this difficult childhood, I'd be able to relate to the girls. And that's why 2018, 2019, I actually climbed Kili twice.
Sure.
2019, I had an opportunity to go and climb with Thuli Madonsela. And it was just such a humble experience for me. It is nothing about me, but, you know, time to share the story and for caring for girls.
Was it very difficult from a physical and preparation and training point of view, because you hadn't ever climbed before? And we've spoken to some people on the show before who've climbed, you know, some of the high peaks of the world. But Kilimanjaro is tough, especially if you've never done mountains before. Did you find it very easy? You did it twice.
No, the first time I was so scared. I was really worried. Like, I even have my will putting it together and give it to my husband. You know, and it just, like, it was really daunting. You know, you know that you're going to do this.
Yeah.
And, you know, but just trying your best, and anything can be possible. And I think, you know, for 30 years that I've been through so much, climbing a mountain shouldn't be too difficult. Does it make sense?
Yeah, well, it does. But, I mean, you make it sound easier than it really is. Do, you know, when you do something like this, obviously you can do it for yourself. But there is a component to this that isn't about you. You said it already, that, you know, these girls that you were kind of trying to help along as well. And it's always good to attach yourself to a cause that you really care about. So tell us a little bit about the Impilo Foundation, because that you're wearing the shirt, it's something that you've started, you've been involved in for a long time. Tell us about that.
So 2020, just the beginning of COVID, I see, like, the suffering in our country. And I was had an opportunity to do a foot drive. And I just called up on social media, I called up all my friends and family. We managed to actually collect 10 tons of food. And I don't even know what is one ton. And they told me, you know, you have one forklift and one pallet, this is one ton. And yeah, and then we just have that 10 tons of food. And I just have to ask myself, who am I to give out those food? There was the motive for me to start the Impilo Collection Foundation. And we gave out the food to the orphanage, to the old age home, to GBV shelter. And yeah, at the shelter, I saw those children actually inside the container. They didn't have proper toilet. The whole time, they're actually playing just 3 pieces of Lego the whole day.
Oh, wow.
So it was really heartbreaking to see that. And later on, we received 1 ton of sanitary pad. And then we gave out to the informal settlement, to the HIV-positive children. And the women who are working there and asked me, Angela, we need bras. And I realized also the girls are not wearing a bra. And men thought that was an invitation of sex attention. So therefore, then after I just did a bit of research and I realized, wow, you know, last year we actually had 2,700 women die from gender-based violence. And then we just started this campaign called Empower Her. And start collecting bras. And I said to myself, no, 2,700 bras is going to be commemorated as 2,700 women. But then we're just receiving, like, people just driving to come and collecting the bras. And we collected 6,200 bras. And we'd be able to, like, display them at the Constitutional Hill, like a piece of art inside the prison. Women's prisons.
Yes.
And we even gave a memorandum to the government, to the Department of Public Safety. And so we have a lot of, we call them social warrior, and to come from different walk of life and just be able to wash them, pack them, label them, and give them away in the beginning of this year during Women's Month. And so we gave us all 6,200 bras to the 3,100 women in our tank. And that's why, that's the reason that I climbed Island Peak this year for 6,200 meters hike, to echo what we are doing as for Empower Her.
I just want to show everybody a picture. Here's the base camp, Everest Base Camp, which is pretty wild. I mean, to be there, that must have been a very special thing. You know, a lot of people talk about, oh, I'm going to do this or I'm going to do that in my life. But to actually get to Everest Base Camp. And then here's a picture of you summiting Island Peak, which is quite amazing, too. What does that feel like?
It was cathartic and it's achievement as well. You know, you put your mind to something, you train for it for the whole year, and that is just that moment you get to the top. It's only like 5 minutes, maximum 10 minutes you need to go down.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you just build up that momentum and, you know, pushing hard.
That's amazing.
In your body and get to
the amazing
time. Yeah, it's like, that's why I said the mountain called me. It took me 30 years to look for my mother. And, you know, I felt like it needs some kind of like person character. You need some kind of character to be able to climb the mountain for the mountain.
Mm-hmm.
We're here to face this mountain in South Africa. The thousands of women die every year. But what are we doing about it, you know? So
well, it's amazing. Someone says here, and I couldn't agree more, in the comments this morning, they said, oh, wow, Angela is actually doing more than any lip service from a politician. And that, you know, you didn't know that you were going to do this, but it's amazing that you are. And I do want to quickly, because we're running out of time here and there's so much I want to talk to you about still, but tell us about Paris Fashion Week, because you were there just recently. You presented a collection at the end of September at the Place Vendôme, which is no small achievement. So, you know, quite apart from all the good work that you're doing, you're also very, very successful at your main work here. Tell us about Paris Fashion Week.
It was really interesting. You know, I met this designer, Kakiso, from M&R in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
And from the township in Pretoria, they didn't even have money to go into the show. So what they did, they asked a friend to wear the garment and showing off outside the show. So how clever was it?
Very clever.
And yeah, and then I started chatting to them and realized they have so much talent. So when in Pilo Collection, we had an opportunity to show our jewelry at the private school. And I just invited them, just come over and bring your garment.
Uh-huh.
And the girl just love his stuff and start supporting him and buying their matric dancers dresses from them.
Yeah.
And yeah, at the beginning of this year, he called me mother, and we are going to Paris Fashion Week. Do you want to showcase your jewelry with us? And I thought, no, it's just like a scam, you know? And he says, no, we actually have the support from the art and culture, from Brand SA, and, you know, come and just be part of this whole Paris Fashion Week. So it was, you know, just never underestimate the youngsters, because they are so talented in South Africa. Sure. They are growing.
That's amazing.
And at the same time, at the same time when we went to Paris, it was the first time they're flying in their life.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so exciting to see through their eyes the world.
Wild. That's so lovely. I'm blown away by what you've done here. It's really, really great to see someone like you making such a difference against gender-based violence, you know, the stuff that you're doing with helping all these women to get bras, climbing, you know, Mount Everest, getting to Paris, all of this stuff. And the most amazing part of this morning, and something I didn't expect, is to hear this terrific story about your mom and your reconnection with her after 30 years, which is absolutely extraordinary. It's just such a pleasure to actually sit and talk to you for a bit. And I hope we'll see each other some more.
Yes, thank you so much. Thanks, Gareth.
Great to see you, Angela, and thank you for being on the show.
Thanks.
Very good.
Ciao. That's
Angela Young, and what an interesting story. What an interesting story.
Gee.
What an interesting, amazing person. You know.
I knew she was interesting.
Yeah.
From when you first described her, and I mean, I've never met her before, and I didn't know exactly what you were going to talk about, but I said she just sounds so interesting, like her life is full of stuff.
Well, someone says here, and this is what's so great about the show, is that you never know what could happen on the show. It's just that's what's cool. Hernani says the unpredictability of this program is unmatched. Great show. Well, listen, it's because you know, we try to find people who have a story, and then we get them to tell their story. And that's exactly what Angela was doing here, just terrific. But I met her a couple of years ago already through Jen. And, you know, you sometimes meet people at these events, and you don't really get to talk to them very much. But I was pretty sure there was something cool going on there that would grab our attention, and that's exactly what's happened. Steph says, was about to log off, but then I decided this is an amazing story. It stayed. That's cool.
That's awesome.
Well, we are going to call it quits for the morning. We've got lots of things to do today. I hope your Monday is extremely successful and you get all the things that you want to done. I also hope that you are ready for the next month because it's coming at you at full steam. It's the 28th today, so before you blink, it's going to be December. And as Sean says, don't forget to like and subscribe. We need all of that.
Yes.
It's very, very cool. All right. Thanks, everybody. We will see you tomorrow, 6 a.m., bright and early. Thanks, Ass. Have a lovely day.
Thanks, you too.
Cheers, everybody. Bye-bye. CliffCentral.com.